We all walk around with this massive underlying assumption about the future of our digital lives.
Oh, absolutely. It's just baked right in at this point.
Right. It is so ingrained in our daily routines that it is practically built into our cultural DNA. And that assumption is that the internet's explosive growth is just a guaranteed permanent upward trajectory.
Like gravity.
Yes, exactly like gravity. We tend to think of technological progress as this undeniable force of nature that is just going to keep expanding, getting faster, getting more ubiquitous, forever.
Right, we just assume our devices will always get smarter.
Just like we assume the sun will rise tomorrow. But the real question here is this sustained, frictionless growth actually a given? Or is it just a really convenient myth that we're all telling ourselves so we can, sleep at night while totally ignoring the fragile infrastructure holding it all together? Welcome to this deep dive.
It's the kind of question that forces you to step way back, honestly. You have to look at the actual foundation of everything we are building right now.
Because we constantly treat tech progress as a perfectly straight line on a graph.
Which is wild because any historian will tell you that human endeavors rarely, if ever, move in straight lines. I mean, they stall out, they collapse, they veer off in these wildly unpredictable directions.
And that brings us to the actual mission of our deep dive today. We are unpacking a truly fascinating theoretical essay by Maureen Raymond.
It is such a good paper.
It really is. It looks at internet sustainability scenarios, but it completely abandons the usual approach. It doesn't just throw a bunch of dry predictive data at you.
Thankfully.
Right. Instead, it takes a highly conceptual approach to the problem. Raymond argues that if we want to truly understand and strategically plan for the future of technology, we have to step away from the spreadsheets for a minute and lean heavily into historical metaphors.
Specifically, the metaphor of the 19th century American West.
Exactly. Looking at cyberspace through the lens of a rugged, unpredictable frontier town, it profoundly changes how you see the digital world we live in.
It really does.
Yeah.
And to appreciate why this conceptual shift is so necessary, we first have to look at the current state of technology planning, which this paper very effectively critiques.
Because right now it's basically all math, right?
Almost entirely quantitative, yeah. You have these massive tech giants and consulting firms, places like McKinsey, Microsoft, Nokia, and they rely on gargantuan data models.
Right.
They are looking at demographics, STEM education growth, broadband adoption rates, hardware manufacturing costs, and they simply extrapolate those numbers into the future.
But wait, looking at these McKinsey and Microsoft models, they are entirely math-based. And human beings aren't math.
Not even a little bit.
We panic, we get greedy, we chase bizarre trends, we suddenly decide we don't trust a platform anymore for like no logical reason. Where is human irrationality accounted for in a spreadsheet of broadband adoption rates?
Well, that is the gaping hole in our current methodology that Riemann's paper is targeting. Data models are fantastic for predicting physical capacity and infrastructure requirements.
Sure, how many cables we need?
Right. But they are terrible at predicting human sentiment or cultural shifts or irrational fears.
Yeah.
And the numbers these models produce are so staggering that they almost blind us to the human element.
Give me an example from the sources.
So if you look at the data, predictions suggest that by 2025, we could be looking at 1 trillion devices connected to the internet.
Wow, 1 trillion.
1 trillion sensors, phones, and machines. And 4.7 billion users. The models suggest that 70% of emerging nations and 90% of the developed world will be online. It paints this picture of inevitable, a massive scale that feels totally unstoppable.
I see the problem there. Staring at all that quantitative data, it's a bit like looking at a highly detailed topographical map of a mountain range.
Okay, I like that analogy.
Yeah, like the map shows you the elevation, it shows you the rocky terrain, the precise grade of the slopes, but it does not tell you a single thing about what the people living on that mountain are actually doing. It doesn't show you if they are building a thriving cooperative community or if they are hoarding resources and literally at each other's throats. So how do we plan for a future that depends just as much on unpredictable human psychology as it does on, miles of fiber optic cable?
We need a totally different set of tools. And this is where the paper introduces its main conceptual contribution. The author uses a theoretical framework called causal layered analysis, or CLA.
CLA.
Right. It was developed by a futurist named Soheil Inayatullah. And CLA is essentially a diagnostic tool. It helps us deconstruct the future by looking at it through 4 distinct interacting layers. It basically forces us to look past the surface data and understand the hidden drivers of human behavior.
Let's break down how this actually functions, because the mechanics of this framework are fascinating. Yeah. It is a chain reaction, right?
So absolutely is a chain reaction.
Yeah.
So the deepest, most unconscious layer is the myth or the metaphor.
Okay.
These are the deep emotional narratives that a culture holds, like the belief that technology always equals human progress.
Right, that deep-seated cultural story.
Exactly. And that myth then creates the third layer, which is the discourse. This is the worldview, the language we use, how politicians and CEOs talk about technology in the media.
So the myth dictates the conversation, and then that conversation dictates the reality on the ground.
Precisely. The discourse dictates the second layer, which is structural causes. Because we talk about tech as inevitable progress, we create economic and political structures to support it.
Things like tax breaks for tech companies.
Right, or massive investments in broadband infrastructure. And finally, those structural realities create the first layer, the litany. The litany is the surface-level quantitative data. It's the headline that says, a million new devices were connected today.
That is so wild to think about. The myth literally causes the math. The unconscious belief creates the physical infrastructure.
It does. And this is where Riemann's paper does something really brilliant. The author takes the CLA framework and applies it to a grand, sweeping metaphor: cyberspace is the new American West.
I love this part.
The idea is that moving our entire lives, our businesses, our banking, and even our organized crime onto the internet is the modern equivalent of homesteading.
We are literally packing up our digital wagons.
Yes, heading out into a vast, untamed virtual frontier to stake our claim.
I want to dig into that mapping concept because the paper deepens this metaphor by bringing in the work of Richard Francavilla.
The geographer, yeah.
Right. He analyzed Walt Disney's Frontierland. Francavilla pointed out that Disney used cartography to create a completely utopian myth of the American West. But these weren't standard maps. They were basically architectural blueprints for nostalgia.
Well, that's a great way to put it.
They weren't designed to help you find the bathroom or the nearest exit. They were deliberately designed to make you feel like a rugged pioneer before you even walked through the park gates.
And Francavilla argues that these maps hide layers of meaning. You open the map and you see a structural layout. But inside that layout is a discourse of human progress.
Like Russian nesting dolls.
Exactly like that. And inside that discourse is a deep, powerful, emotional myth about total freedom, boundless opportunity, and the untamed spirit of going west. Riemann's paper argues that we do the exact same thing with the internet today.
How so?
We take our deep human desires for freedom and endless economic opportunity, and we hide them inside the dry technical language of photons, electrons, and bandwidth. We are essentially selling ourselves a vibe, but we're disguising it as a tech spec.
But consider the actual history of the American West here. The romance is incredibly heavy-handed. Disney's Frontierland is a sanitized theme park.
Oh, totally.
If we look at the real history of the 19th century frontier, it wasn't just this fun adventure where everyone got a homestead, panned for gold, and lived happily ever after. It was brutal.
It was awful for a lot of people.
It was chaotic. There was disease, starvation, extreme weather, and just a staggering amount of violence. If cyberspace is the new West, aren't we glossing over some incredibly dark realities by using this metaphor?
That is a crucial tension. And the source material explicitly addresses the danger of romanticizing the frontier. The paper brings in the vital counterperspective from A.C. Yen, who wrote a pretty scathing critique in the Berkeley Technology Law Journal.
What does Yen argue?
Yen argues that this utopian, open and free metaphor of the Wild West is highly problematic. It conveniently ignores the horrific realities of that era, most notably the systemic oppression and displacement of Native Americans.
Right.
And the complete lack of the rule of law that routinely resulted in bloodshed and exploitation.
So it wasn't an empty frontier just waiting to be peacefully settled. It was actively contested, dangerous territory.
And Yen's critique proves exactly why we cannot just blindly trust the utopian myth of technology. The dark side of the frontier metaphor, the lawlessness, the exploitation of the vulnerable, the monopolization of resources by ruthless railroad barons. That is precisely why we need to use causal layered analysis to explore multiple divergent scenarios for the internet's future.
We can't just plan for the theme park version.
Right, we have to rigorously plan for the harsh, unforgiving realities of the frontier.
Okay, so if we take this frontier lens and actually apply it, what do these massive tech models look like on the ground? The paper uses this framework to lay out four allegorical futures. The first one is the frontier boomtown.
The boomtown.
Yeah, this is the scenario of dynamic, explosive growth that we all sort of naturally expect anyway.
In the boomtown scenario, society, government policy, and cybersecurity all work in perfect, harmonious concert. If we break it down using the CLA framework, the underlying myth is pure optimism. It is a new frontier and absolutely anything is possible.
And what does that myth create?
That myth creates a discourse where policymakers and citizens believe that regulation will seamlessly keep technology in check without stifling innovation.
It is so much like the 19th century railroad companies moving west, knowing that wherever they decide to lay tracks, a thriving town will magically appear overnight to extract the gold and silver.
Yes.
The infrastructure practically wills the economy into existence.
And we see real-world corollaries to this exact dynamic right now. The paper notes China's massive pledge to invest $189 billion to expand last-mile technologies.
Wow, $189 billion.
Yeah. That incredible influx of state capital is the modern equivalent of laying thousands of miles of new train tracks into uncharted territory. They are aiming to create a massive, frictionless economic boom in emerging markets.
And the boomtown isn't just about connecting rural communities. It's about the density of the technology itself. The paper brings in Jayavardhana Gubbi's vision of the Internet of Things, or IoT.
Right, the sensor networks.
Exactly. He sketches out a future where billions of microscopic sensors are seamlessly talking to each other. It is like putting the development of a frontier town on fast forward. You blink, and the dusty one-horse settlement is suddenly this high-tech, deeply interconnected digital metropolis. The traffic lights talk to the cars talk to the grid, and everything just miraculously works.
Right, that's the dream.
But that utopian vision assumes limitless resources and flawless execution. What happens when the physical infrastructure physically cannot carry the weight of all those new digital settlers? That creates a totally different reality, which the paper calls the trackless train.
Or the bandwidth bottleneck.
Exactly.
This scenario forces us to look at the economic limits of the frontier. Think about a literal railroad company in the 1800s. They did not build tracks into certain territories simply because it wasn't immediately profitable.
The juice wasn't worth the squeeze.
Right. In the trackless train scenario, the internet falters in developing nations, or even in rural areas of developed nations, because the cost of laying fiber or building cell towers simply does not offer investors a rapid enough return on investment.
It is like zoning a massive, sprawling, futuristic digital city, building millions of new digital homes and businesses, but completely forgetting to widen the single two-lane dirt highway leading into the city.
That is a great visual.
The growth of data-heavy apps entirely outstrips the physical bandwidth available at the core traffic centers. The digital train physically cannot go where the tracks haven't been laid.
And the CLA breakdown for this bottleneck is incredibly telling. The litany, the surface reality is simply, there is not enough bandwidth.
Okay.
The structural cause is that software and app development vastly outpaces the physical laying of cable. But the discourse is where it gets dangerous.
Why?
The discourse is a blind faith that Microsoft, Cisco, and IBM will make everything okay.
That is a wild assumption to build a global economy on.
It is a profound vulnerability. The myth in this scenario is a kind of technological paternalism. It's this deep-seated unconscious belief that massive tech corporations will inevitably swoop in and solve our fundamental infrastructure problems out of the goodness of their hearts, you know, regardless of whether it actually makes economic sense for their shareholders.
Which rarely does.
Exactly. Assuming big tech will bail out unprofitable regions is a perilous strategy for any government or business.
That reliance on big tech assumes they will always have the capital and the motivation to save us. But what if the capital dries up? I mean, the gold rush didn't last forever. Veins of silver eventually run dry. And that brings us to the third scenario. Frontier boom goes bust.
The bust.
We are talking about a full-on internet stall.
The historical reality is that no industry, not even the seemingly invincible tech sector, is immune to the boom and bust cycle. We only need to look back to the 2009 global financial meltdown to see how quickly liquidity can evaporate and how fast things can change.
It happens in a flash.
In the bust scenario, the telecommunications and internet sectors take a massive structural hit.
And it is not just about a temporary dip in the stock market either. The structural causes here involve a fundamental miscalculation of human desire. What happens when a telecom company spends billions building the infrastructure for a new digital town, but the users simply lose interest?
Right, or they pivot to something else.
Yeah, or companies realize they vastly miscalculated the actual adoption rates of new expensive technologies.
It is exactly like realizing the gold mine you built your town around is actually empty. You constructed the saloons, the banks, and the general stores, but the settlers don't come. Or worse, they arrive and quickly leave.
The ghost town effect.
Exactly. Financial and regulatory roadblocks pop up, venture capital vanishes, and that speeding digital train just grinds to a devastating halt. The litany is a sudden stall in growth.
And the myth operating underneath that stall is fascinating. It is the dangerous assumption that causes the bust to be so catastrophic in the first place.
Which is?
The unwavering belief that continued growth is inevitable. When you plan your entire society, your retirement funds, and your global supply chains around the myth of inevitable double-digit growth, a stall isn't just a bump in the road, it is an existential crisis.
Absolutely. The psychological shift from exuberance to panic happens overnight. But as destabilizing as an economic stall sounds, the fourth scenario might actually be the most visceral and immediate threat we face. This is the Western holdup, representing profound internet insecurity.
Even if the infrastructure holds up and the economy holds up, there is a more primal threat. The people who figure out the system is vulnerable. We are talking about the modern train robbers.
Yes. This scenario is driven entirely by fear and vulnerability. In the Old West, train robbers didn't try to steal everything. They targeted the physical choke points of wealth.
The bank vaults.
The bank vaults and the stagecoaches carrying payroll. Today, as our entire society moves online, we are taking all of our personal data, our intellectual property, and our financial wealth, and we are packing it onto a digital stagecoach.
And the hackers, the state-sponsored cyber criminals, they are the outlaws waiting in the canyon.
It is wild to think about it in these terms.
It really is, but the paper points out that massive tech companies like Cisco and Microsoft actually view security, not hardware, not adoption rates, as the single greatest obstacle to the internet's future growth.
Wow.
It's no longer a question of whether we can build the technology, it's a question of whether we can protect the people once they are using it.
And if we run the causal layered analysis for the Western holdup, the structural cause is terrifyingly simple. Cybersecurity simply cannot keep up with the pace of technological advancement.
They're moving too fast.
The criminals are always one step ahead of the sheriffs, exploiting zero-day vulnerabilities faster than patches can be written.
That is a terrifying discourse. Because if the sheriffs can't protect the town, the discourse becomes, the net is too dangerous. Let's go back to paper.
Which is a huge regression.
It implies a total systemic regression where we literally trust a filing cabinet in a locked room more than we trust a cloud server.
It sounds extreme to modern ears, but think about the power of the myth operating here. The underlying myth is that cyberspace is no longer a land of opportunity. It is a dark alley.
A lawless no man's land.
Right. Where you will inevitably be robbed blind, your identity stolen, your savings wiped out. If that myth takes hold, if people and businesses fundamentally lose trust in the safety of the digital frontier, they will pack up their wagons and leave. They will abandon the technology, crippling the global economy in the process.
So we have these four incredibly distinct causal futures. The utopian boomtown, driven by boundless optimism. The bottlenecked trackless train, crippled by uneven infrastructure and a reliance on corporate saviors. The stalled out bust, caused by the arrogance of inevitable growth. And the terrifying Western holdup, driven by a fundamental loss of security and trust.
That's the landscape.
As we synthesize all of this, what should you, listening to this right now, actually do with these scenarios? Why does this conceptual exercise matter for your life, your business, or your own technological planning?
It matters because it fundamentally changes how you assess risk and how you prepare for disruptions. When you are planning for the future, whether you are an entrepreneur launching a startup, a city planner designing a smart grid, or just someone trying to navigate your own digital security looking only at quantitative data models, is dangerously insufficient.
It really is.
Data tells you what is technically possible. It does not tell you what is humanly probable.
You cannot just look at the topographical map and assume you know how the settlers will behave.
Exactly. You have to truth test your plans by looking at the myths you personally hold. Ask yourself, are you building your business strategy on the unconscious myth that tech growth is inevitable? Are you assuming that big tech will just magically fix all the bandwidth and infrastructure bottlenecks before they affect your bottom line?
Probably not a safe bet.
No. Sustainable, resilient planning requires you to blend those cold, hard technological insights with these rich, complex human metaphors. You certainly want to plan for the boomtown, but you desperately need a contingency plan for the train robbers.
It is about recognizing that technology doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists in us, It is shaped by our fears, our greed, our irrational exuberance, and our hopes. And that leaves us with a final provocative thought to mull over as we wrap up this deep dive.
I love this part.
Since the internet started as a humble ARPANET military experiment way back in the 1960s, we have all been acting as the eager pioneers of this incredibly vast new digital frontier. We have rushed in to stake our claims, build our platforms, and establish our digital territories. But if we are indeed the homesteaders of this modern era, we have to ask ourselves what physical world behaviors, what historical biases, or what territorial instincts are we blindly packing up in our wagons and carrying into cyberspace right now? And more importantly, as we build the next iteration of the internet, which of those deeply human flaws should we be deliberately leaving behind? Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you out on the frontier.